Thank you, Dominic, for the introduction. Thank you also for the invitation to speak here. It's great to be back at Perimeter. I was fortunate enough to spend a few months here at the end of 2019, but unfortunately, my visit was cut short by the beginning of 2020. So it's great to see that things are lively around here again. Anyways, I'm going to tell you about work that was done in collaboration with the folks shown here. Yuan, Arpit, Wilbert, Nat, and Dom. We constructed new examples of quantum error correcting codes inspired by the classification of topological phases of matter, which are characterized by abelian anion theories. Here are the three main takeaways for this talk. I'll discuss three constructions of quantum error correcting codes. In the first, we constructed 2D topological polystabilizer codes similar to the toric code, but these codes are more exotic in that they are characterized by a wider range of anion theories than the toric code. However, they don't capture all anion theories. To get an even broader range of anion theories, we built three-dimensional topological polystabilizer codes where the anion theory is hosted on the boundary, on the two-dimensional boundary of the system. Then to capture all abelian anion theories, we have to generalize from stabilizer codes to subsystem codes. In the remaining 58 minutes or so, I'll try and clarify what I just said here. So if it's unclear, that's okay at this point. So here's the plan for the rest of the talk. I'll begin with some motivation and background. PI has a diverse set of physicists, so it's a bit challenging to come up with the right background information to give. But I thought it'd be valuable if I first review the toric code just to make things a little more interesting. I'll review the Z4 toric code. Then I'll make some general comments about the structure of abelian anion theories. If at any time something's unclear, or you could use more background, please don't hesitate to interrupt me and let me know. Naive questions are more than welcome, so please don't hold back. After the background, I'll be able to describe our three constructions, and I'll conclude by listing some exciting avenues for future work. So as promised, some motivation and background. Excuse me. If you have stuck your nose in any popular science articles recently, you would know that quantum computers have the potential to revolutionize science and technology. In principle, they can be used to solve challenging quantum chemistry problems, which may lead to advancements in drug design or carbon fixation. They can also be used to simulate many-body quantum systems and thereby solve difficult condensed matter problems. There's one minor but very big issue, and that's that errors are a serious obstruction to performing reliable computations, especially for quantum computers. And that's in part because quantum computers are built from small components, meaning that they're susceptible to small fluctuations in the environment. Even a cosmic ray particle whizzing through your system can corrupt your information. For quantum computers, of course, we also have to deal with quantum noise. There's more than just bit flips that we have to protect our information from. Fortunately, if you see an error in your system, there's a solution. And that solution is to use a quantum error correcting code. That is, we can use many qubits to store a small number of well-protected qubits. Those qubits are called the logical qubits. A prime example of a quantum error correcting code, which I'll show in the next two slides, is the toric code. But there are many quantum error correcting codes out on the market. In this work, what I'll discuss is an exploration of the space of quantum error correcting codes. We're searching through the space of quantum error correcting codes to find codes that have potentially better performance than the toric code. This might mean improving error thresholds or the robustness to noise. This may mean reducing computational overheads, or in general, finding quantum error correcting codes that are better suited to current hardware. Before I tell you about any new quantum error correcting codes, let me tell you about an old quantum error correcting code. That's the toric code. Here I'll discuss the Z4 toric code. The Z4 toric code is defined on a square lattice with a four-dimensional qubit at each edge. The operator algebra of a four-dimensional qubit is generated by a generalized poly X and poly Z operator. The fourth power of these operators is the identity, and they fail to commute by a fourth root of unity, a factor of I. The Z4 toric code is defined by this Hamiltonian. It's a sum of two types of terms. The first is a vertex term, and it's a product of poly X operators around a vertex. The second is a plaquette term, and it's a product of poly Z operators around a plaquette. This is indeed a Pauli stabilizer code. The terms of the Hamiltonian are products of Pauli operators, and you can check that they're mutually commuting. That means that this Hamiltonian is exactly solvable. The terms can be simultaneously diagonalized. Furthermore, it's a topological Pauli stabilizer code, and that's evidenced by the fact that the ground state degeneracy of this model depends on the topology of the underlying manifold. For example, if we put the system on a torus, it will have a 16-fold ground state degeneracy. Moreover, those ground states are locally indistinguishable, meaning that we can hide quantum information in the ground state subspace, and that information will be well protected from local errors. But even more indicative of the fact that the Z4 toric code is a topological Pauli stabilizer code is that it exhibits anionic excitations. Here I'll call an anion any local excitation that cannot be created or destroyed by local operators. The anions of the Z4 toric code are generated by two types of excitations. The first corresponds to a violation of a vertex term, and that's created by a string or a product of poly Z operators along a path in the lattice. That string commutes with all the Hamiltonian terms along its length and only fails to commute with the vertex terms at its endpoints. We call that violation an E anion. Likewise, there's an anion that corresponds to a violation of a plaquette term, and this is created by a product of poly X operators along a path in the dual lattice. So I told you that these generate all of the anions in the toric code. Here they are. There are 16 anion types. Here one is what I'll call the trivial anion. It corresponds to a local excitation that can be created by local operators. The anions form a Z4 cross Z4 group under fusion, where fusion amounts to bringing two anions to the same region. For example, if I bring an E next to an M, the composite excitation is creatively named EM, and so on and so forth. But the most striking feature of anions is that they can exhibit non-trivial exchange statistics. E is a boson, meaning that the wave function is symmetric under the exchange of two E anions. M is also a boson, but much more interestingly, EM is a semion, meaning that the wave function incurs a factor of I when you exchange two EM anions. So here's the anion theory of the Z4 toric code. This data characterizes the topological phase exhibited by the Z4 toric code. More generally, we'll be discussing abelian anion theories, and they're specified by the same set of data, a list of anion types, their fusion rules, and their exchange statistics. The exchange statistics satisfy certain consistency conditions, those consistency conditions can be solved, and we have a complete classification of abelian anion theories. And it turns out there are many abelian anion theories out there which aren't captured by a toric code or layers of toric codes. So a natural question is, can those anion theories be captured by some 2D topological polystabilizer code, which is then distinct from a toric code? Well, for a long time, we believed the answer was no. And that's based on a few results which showed that if you give me a topological polystabilizer code, which is translation invariant and defined on prime dimensional q-dets, then there exists a finite depth quantum circuit that maps that topological polystabilizer code to decoupled copies of ZP toric codes. So it's believed that all you could capture with polystabilizer codes in two dimensions was layers of toric codes. Yeah?
Decoupled, do you mean the anions in different layers can't trade non-trivially?
That's one consequence of them being decoupled. But I mean, there are physically no interactions between these layers. But as a consequence, yes, the anions have trivial braiding between layers.
So what's the classification of the anions? Just
Yeah, I think they're all captured by K matrices. Yeah.
So here by abelian anion, you mean abelian topological order?
That's right, yeah. The fusion rules are definite. It forms a group under fusion. So what we asked is, are more exotic anion theories, beyond those captured by the toric code, exhibited by topological polystabilizer codes defined on composite dimensional q-dets, where the dimension is maybe a product of primes, like the four-dimensional q-det? And the reason I put this question on the slide is because the answer is yes. And that's what I'll tell you about next. But before I move on to the first construction, are there any questions, comments, concerns about the background thus far?
Do you consider abelian ones possibly or what?
Yeah, there's a proof that non-abelian anions cannot be modeled by Pauli stabilizer codes.
I see.
So we can't hope to capture non-abelian anions in these models. You might ask, well, what's the simplest model that can capture those non-abelian anions? And that's a good question. There are some
abelian anions that cannot be captured by stabilizers, I suppose.
There are some abelian, So there are some abelian anion theories that can't be captured by 2D topological stabilizer codes. And I'll specify what those anion theories are at the end of this section. But some of those can be captured in three dimensions. Some of those can be captured by subsystem codes. OK, here's the first example of a 2D topological polystabilizer code that is beyond the toric code or stacks of toric codes. This is what I call the double semion stabilizer code. Again, it's defined on a square lattice with a four-dimensional q-det at each edge. The Hamiltonian is somewhat ugly. I don't want you to get lost in this Hamiltonian. I'll explain where these terms come from momentarily. But what's important is that this is indeed a topological polystabilizer code. The terms are products of Pauli operators, and you can check using the commutation relations that these are all mutually commuting. That means they can be simultaneously diagonalized. This is exactly solvable. And you can see that on a torus, this has a four-dimensional ground state subspace. More generally, the dimension of the ground state subspace depends on the topology of the underlying manifold. So this is indeed a topological polystabilizer code. And moreover, those ground states are locally indistinguishable. So this is good as a quantum error correcting code for protecting against local errors. Now, what's the anion theory of this model? Well, again, we look at the local excitations that cannot be created locally. The anions of the double semion stabilizer code are generated by two types of excitations. The first I'll refer to as a B anion. It corresponds to a violation of this vertex term. And it's created by a product of poly Z squared terms along a path in the lattice. The second I'll refer to as an S anion. This is created by a string of X and Z operators and violates some combination of the vertex terms and plaquette terms. So here are all the anions of the double semi-on stabilizer code. There's B, S, and their composite, which I'll refer to as S bar. These form a Z2 cross Z2 group under fusion. So B squares to a trivial X anion. It's something that can be created locally. Likewise with S and S bar. We can already see that this is distinct from the anion theory of the Z4 toric code, because there, the fusion group was Z4 cross Z4. So already this is different in one regard. But where it's different from any toric code is made clear by considering also the exchange statistics. B is a boson, or boring. S is a semion. If I exchange two S anions, the wave function incurs a factor of I. And S bar is an anti-semion. The exchange statistics means I picks up a factor of minus I. So these are distinct from even the toric code defined on qubits. The toric code defined on qubits doesn't exhibit any semions or anti-semions. This is indeed distinct from a toric code or any stack of toric codes.
And you also un-gauge.
You can also ungauge this model to get the Z2 SPT. That's right. And it'll be a Pauli stabilizer model for that Z2 SPT.
Z4 Pauli stabilizer.
It's four-dimensional qubits. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The anomalous symmetry action at the boundary is order 4, but within a particular subspace, it's order 2, and it reproduces all the properties that you'd expect out of a Z2 SPT. So how did we construct this model? Where did that Hamiltonian come from? Well, the key observation comes from a comparison of the double semion anions and the Z4 toric code anions. There seems to be a bit of a correspondence. I can identify B with E squared. They're both bosons. They're both order 2 under fusion. I can maybe identify S with EM. They're both semions. And I can then identify S bar with EM cubed. They're both anti-semions. There's an issue, and that's that the fusion rules don't match. S fused with itself produces a trivial anion, whereas EM fused with itself produces this E squared M squared anion, and it's non-trivial. So what do we do? How do we make those fusion rules match? What we can do is try to identify E squared M squared with a vacuum, with a trivial anion. And that can be done by condensing E squared M squared. So that's our construction. We start with the Z4 toric code Hamiltonian and condense the E squared M squared anions. This condensation can be implemented by adding short string operators that create E squared M squared anions to the Hamiltonian. So these create E squared M squared anions, X squared creates a pair of M squared anions, Z squared creates a pair of E squared anions. Then to condense the anions, to proliferate those E squared M squared anions, all we need to do is take this coefficient JE to be large. And the result, after some degenerate perturbation theory, is this double semion Hamiltonian. It's the effective Hamiltonian that comes out of perturbation theory. The vertex and the plaquette terms come from products of the vertex and plaquette terms of the Z4 toric code. And these are nothing other than the E squared M squared short string operators.
Can you do this for any Lagrangian subgroup?
So how does this model generalize? Well, what we can do is take stacks of toric codes and condense some subgroup of bosons. And then we end up with a possibly new topological polystabilizer code. It turns out that this construction captures a large family of abelian anion theories, but not all. It only captures those abelian anion theories that admit a gapped boundary. There's some more technical language that defines what I mean by a gapped boundary. Specifically, I mean the anion theory is modular. And as Chang just said, it admits a Lagrangian subgroup. I put these in black boxes. It's OK if you don't fully understand the meaning of those terms. They won't be critical moving forwards. But I will say that modular has a simple interpretation. Modular just means that for every anion, there exists some other anion with which it braids non-trivially. So this captures a large number of anion theories, but not all of them.
So just to clarify that, I mean, this is the same class of theory that they captured by Levin,
right? That's right. A connection between Levin-Wen model and this construction. Well, what we can do is we can take our double semion stabilizer code and map it via a finite depth circuit with ancilla to the Levin-Wen stringnet model. I don't know how to interpret the stringnet models in terms of condensing some anion, but at least they are indeed in the same topological phase as defined by equivalence classes of states under local unitaries. So there is a way to map between them, but I don't know if that's what you're looking for exactly. Yeah.
Not a naive question.
Yeah.
So what's the motivation to focus on stabilizers?
Yeah, so stabilizers mean that you can use the full power of the stabilizer formalism. The reason people focus on the toric code so much is that it can be represented by a polystabilizer model. You can look at some of these string net models, and they're difficult algebraically to work with in comparison. So it makes it simpler to find, like, compute metrics of these codes, compute, say, the error thresholds and things like this. It's also, I mean, I can write down the string operators for the double semion code in one line, whereas with the string operators in the string net models, you'd have to, well, really what we're doing here is fusing some anion string, and there's this strange product of I's that sticks around, and that's all captured within polystabilizers here. Right. So at this point, we can ask ourselves, can abelian anion theories that don't admit a gap boundary be captured by codes that are possibly beyond the 2D stabilizer codes that we considered previously? And the answer is yes. I mean, if you want to realize an anion theory that doesn't admit a gap boundary, one solution is to just hide the boundary. You work on the surface of a three-dimensional quantum error correcting code.
By the way, for the previous part, do you have a fermion generalization?
That's in the works. Yeah. That's in the works. But yes, yeah, there's a nice fermionic generalization. In fact, all of this construction can be phrased in terms of K matrices. And then it's fairly straightforward to generalize to fermions. OK, let me move on to our construction of three-dimensional topological polystabilizer codes. I'll again begin with an example, and then backtrack and try and clarify where this example came from. So here's the Hamiltonian. It's a bit of a monstrosity. Actually, that was an error. Here's the Hamiltonian. It's a bit of a monstrosity. Don't worry about what's going on with these Hamiltonian terms. So this code I'll refer to as the chiral-semion boundary code. It's a boundary code because the information is stored at the boundary of this three-dimensional system. It's defined on a cubic lattice with a four-dimensional qudit on each edge. It's indeed a Pauli stabilizer code. The Hamiltonian terms are all products of Pauli operators. And if you had nothing better to do, you could check that these are mutually commuting. This is, moreover, a topological polystabilizer code. The ground state degeneracy depends on the topology of the underlying manifold. If you put this on a solid torus, then it has a two-dimensional ground state subspace, and those ground states are locally indistinguishable. There is one type of anion exhibited by this model, and that anion lives purely on the surface. There are no interesting anions in the bulk of this model. I'll refer to this anion on the surface as S. It's created by this funny string operator that involves X and Z operators. These purple operators are X operators that leak into the bulk.
So as a 3D system, what is this topological fence?
As a 3D system, it's a paramagnet.
And it has degeneracy.
And it has degeneracy, that's right.
It has a boundary.
Only if you have a boundary, it has degeneracy. That's right. Well, I mean, there is some finite depth, or it's going to be some local time evolution by a finite time evolution by a local Hamiltonian that will decouple the anions from the bulk, and then you'll have a paramagnet with a 2D topological order on the boundary.
When you say solid torus, solid torus means
a filled-in donut, a donut, a bagel, yeah. A filled-in two torus.
So can you find the general map in terms of the polystabilizer to the bulk of the space? Sometimes you can't do that even though the ground state is stable.
That's right, yeah. So I can comment on this later in the talk. I didn't know if I'll have time, so I do have a slide, but I can stop and say more about it when we get there. But that's right. You can disentangle this Hamiltonian into a paramagnet in the bulk, but you can't do it with a finite depth circuit. Okay, so it turns out that's the only anion, and the anion theory is just contains just one, the trivial anion, and S. It forms, S generates a Z2 group under fusion, and S is again a semion. This anion theory, yeah.
Sorry, just to make sure, is it an SPT 3D with an anomalous edge?
Yeah, thanks. So in 3D, you can impose a Z2 one-form symmetry, and then it will be a non-trivial one-form SPT. Yeah, that's right. I don't think it has time reversal symmetry. I don't think it's protected by any zero form symmetries, but it is a one form SVT. Thanks. So this anion theory is special because it does not admit a gapped boundary. There's no Lagrangian subgroup. So this anion theory cannot be captured by 2D poly or topological poly stabilizer codes. So this is fundamentally can only be realized on the boundary of a three-dimensional topological poly stabilizer code. So how did we construct this model? Well, the first observation is that if I take a chiral semion theory and a chiral anti-semion theory, I obtain that just by flipping this model upside down. So I have semion, and then two copies of semion, and I flip one relative to the other. It turns out that anion theory is the same as the double semion anion theory. This is really where the name double semion comes from. Then what we can do is a coupled layer construction. We take a stack of double semion stabilizer codes, and we can view this as a stack of chiral semion and chiral anti-semion codes, anion theories. And what's important here is that if we take an anti-semion and a semion, that'll behave like a boson. And as it's a boson, it can be condensed. And there are two options for creating an anti-semion-semion pair. One is to do it within a single layer or within neighboring layers, such as these, intra-layer pairing. And that's just the B boson of a double semion stabilizer code. Alternatively, we can do an interlayer pairing. So we'll pair the anti-semion from one layer with the semion of the next layer. And that will behave like a boson. Then we can condense that boson. And the result is we go from a stack of double semion stabilizer codes to a three-dimensional model where all the excitations in the bulk are confined. You can check that all of the anions in the layers of double semion code have non-trivial braiding relations with that condensed boson, so they'll be confined. There's some linear energetic penalty to creating those at large separations. But what we're left with, due to our pairing of the semion and anti-semion theories, is just a single copy of the chiral semion theory on the top surface. Now we can see where this crazy Hamiltonian comes from. Just for now, ignore all of the purple operators. Maybe it's kind of hard to distinguish purple from blue and red, but as best as you can, try and ignore the purple operators. And what you see is that if I ignore the purple operators, this is just the stabilizer term of the double semion stabilizer code. This is the plaquette term, and these are the E squared M squared condensation terms. So these come from the coupled layer, the layers of double semion code. The remaining two terms are can be viewed as terms that condense the semion and anti-semion pair. So this, for example, will create an anti-semion. This X and Z creates an anti-semion in one layer, and X and Z here will create the semion in the next layer. The purple operators are there to make everything commute, so that this is a stabilizer code.
So if I impose the translation symmetry along that direction, is the translation generically continuous?
Is the translation symmetry continuous?
Is the phase transition generically continuous?
The phase transition from stacks of double semion? I'm not sure. This is not something that we can probe within the stabilizer formalism, so it'd be a challenging question. Yeah, but that's interesting. I'm not sure.
So at the end of the day, how different is it from Walker Wong?
Yeah, so it's very similar to Walker Wong. But if you plugged in chiral semion to Walker, so Walker Wong models, you plug in an anion theory, and what you get out is a three-dimensional model with that anion theory on the surface. So you could do that with chiral semion. You can plug in chiral semion. You get some three-dimensional model with chiral semion on the boundary. But that won't be a Pauli stabilizer model. It'll be non-Pauli. You can construct this via Walker-Wong models. That's how we did it in this paper. But I thought it was nice to do it from a coupled layer construction because I already introduced double semion. So the way you do it with Walker-Wong models is you actually start with an extension of chiral semion, which does admit a Pauli stabilizer Walker-Wong model. I can show this at the end. Then there will be some bulk excitation. You condense that bulk excitation. That reduces you back down to chiral semion on the boundary. Yeah, but it's very similar to the Walker-Wong construction.
If I view this as an error critic code, does it mean that any bulk errors will not take you out of the logical space?
That's right. Well, sorry, the bulk errors will take you out of the code space, but you can correct them easily without any concern of corrupting your information, with minimal concern. So this construction generalizes. More generally, we can take stacks of the 2D topological Pauli stabilizer codes that we constructed previously and do an interlayer condensation to produce new examples of 3D topological Pauli stabilizer codes with some anion theory on the surface, which may or may not admit a gapped boundary. It turns out this construction exhausts all modular abelian anion theories.
Previously, you mentioned stabilizer codes cannot produce non-abelian topological order. Does that also apply to boundary?
Yes. Fundamentally, it's because, well, we can talk about the reasons why later, and then I can get wrong answers recorded. Then I won't get wrong answers recorded. But the basic idea is that in stabilizer models, you can uniquely specify all the eigenstates with the stabilizer eigenvalues. And that's an obstruction to having non-abelian anions, where you want some degeneracy from having local excitations. Yeah, but I can try and clarify that point later.
What's an example of a non-modular abelian?
Yeah, so that will come next. I'll give an example. Maybe this. Say that again? Yeah, if it's a ground state of a local Hamiltonian, it should be modular. There's no proof, as far as I'm aware. We did prove that if you have a two-dimensional topological poly stabilizer code, then the anion theory has to be modular. But I don't know of any general proof. So these non-modular anion theories don't show up in the context of condensed matter systems in terms of some excitations of a Hamiltonian.
I thought in Kitaev's famous paper, there's an appendix with title modularity equal to unitarity.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that appendix. Right, so in order to capture a wider range of anion theories, those that which may be non-modular, we need to move away from stabilizer codes. That's why we consider subsystem codes. So there's a bit of technical overhead to get to our construction. I'll have to define subsystem codes. This is the most technical part of the talk. Hopefully it'll be okay, but if it's unclear, again, let me know. So subsystem codes are a generalization of stabilizer codes in which the stabilizer group is defined implicitly in terms of a group of operators called the gauge group. This has nothing to do with gauge theories. It's an unfortunate nomenclature. So you'll have to separate that part of your brain and stop thinking about gauge theories. This is gauge group in that these operators don't affect the information. That's the sense in which its gauge is used. But in general, the gauge group, unlike the stabilizer group, may be non-abelian. Some group of poly operators, they may fail to commute with one another. We then define the stabilizer group from the gauge group. We say the stabilizer group is the center of the gauge group. This is the maximal abelian subgroup of the gauge group. Once we have the stabilizer group, we can do what we usually do and define the code space as the plus one eigenspace of the stabilizers. However, unlike stabilizer codes, we won't store information in the full code space. We'll only use part of the code space. And that part of the code space is determined by the gauge group. The gauge group induces a factorization of the code space into a gauge subsystem and a logical subsystem. The gauge operators commute with the stabilizers by definition, so they preserve the code space. They act non-trivially only within the code space. In fact, they generate a representation of the poly group within the code space. So it defines the algebra for the poly operators on only a subsystem of the code space, that's the gauge subsystem. The remaining part of the code space is the logical subsystem, that's where we store information. So this isn't a physical subsystem, it's not like I'm designating these qubits as the logical subsystem, it's a subsystem within a subspace. Is that more or less clear? Okay, so now let me give an example of a subsystem code. This is the Z41 subsystem code. I'll explain where Z41 comes from later. That denotes the anion theory, as we'll see. Again, it's defined on a square lattice with four-dimensional qubits. And here's the gauge group, written somewhat suggestively. one can check that the center of the gauge group is generated by this type of operator. And that is all we need to specify the subsystem code. This is a Pauli subsystem code, because the gauge group is generated by products of Pauli operators. It's furthermore a topological Pauli subsystem code. It turns out that the dimension of the logical subsystem depends on the topology of the underlying manifold, and it's robust against the local errors. For this code, there's a two-dimensional logical subsystem if we put it on a torus.
Sorry, maybe I didn't fully understand it.
Yeah.
So for the closed space, you want all of this to be equal to one, right? Sorry.
Yeah. So the code space is the plus one eigenspace of these stabilizers.
Oh, just the stabilizers.
That's right.
Gauge groups can still act non-trivially.
It can still act non-trivially, and it will act non-trivially within that gauge subsystem.
Okay.
Some part is left over. So, yeah.
Sorry. Could you explain why this is topological and why it's robust against errors?
I didn't explain that explicitly. This is just a condition that can be checked. And it says this is a topological subsystem code that's essentially equivalent to saying that local errors are either gauge operators or they violate some stabilizer. And that means that they're detectable and correctable, in principle correctable.
That's just the meaning of topological subsystem code.
That and the stabilizer group can be generated by local operators. That's the technical conditions for a subsystem code to be topological.
So is it correct to say that if I take a stabilizer code and only take part of the terms, and then the other terms I call that gauge group, and that's basically what it is?
Yeah, so you could, for example, take a Z4 toric code and designate some of those logical operators as gauge operators. The problem with that is then it's the gauge group is non-local, because you have those long string operators that you've just added to the gauge group. That's the other condition. It has to be, the gauge group also has to be locally generated. So this is a bit more subtle. You can see already what's happening here. I've taken Z4 toric code terms and I've added some other junk that's local. And that has the same effect that you're describing. We lose some of the logical operators. And I'll explain why you would want to do this at all in a moment. But first, what's the underlying anion theory? Well, to define anions for subsystem codes, we need a new definition, because we don't have an underlying Hamiltonian. I'll define an anion to be a violation of a gauge operator, some failure to commute with a gauge operator, which cannot be reproduced by local operators. The anions of the Z41 subsystem code are generated by one type of anion, which I'll label as S. And this is created by a string of X and Z operators along a path in the lattice. This commutes with all of the gauge operators along the length of this string, and only fails to commute with some combination of vertex and plaquette gauge operators at the endpoints. And the point is that this is a non-trivial anion. Those commutation relations cannot be reproduced by operators that are supported only near the endpoint. You need to have this extended operator.
Why do you choose the variation of gauge operator instead of variation of the level operator?
You could also, yeah, there is a notion of just violating the stabilizers. Some of these will violate stabilizers. This one, in fact, S does violate a stabilizer, but S squared doesn't violate a stabilizer. And there's a dichotomy of the anions in subsystem codes. Those that violate stabilizers are detectable. Those that violate gauge operators, they aren't detectable. They're somehow invisible in the system. And it turns out that has some close connections with non-modularity and modularity, which, if you remind me, I can comment on further. Right, so all the anions are generated by S. It's order 4, so there's S, S squared, and S cubed. This forms a Z4 group under fusion, hence the Z4 and Z4 one. And here are the exchange statistics. S is again a semion. S squared, however, is a boson. And S cubed is again a semion. This theory is non-modular. S squared has trivial braiding relations with all the other anions. This can be seen from the fact that S squared doesn't change the exchange statistics if you fuse it with another anion. If I fuse S squared onto S, it turns into S cubed. It doesn't change the exchange statistics. It's still a semion. Likewise, if I fuse S squared with itself, I get a trivial anion. They're both bosons. So this is, in fact, an indication that we have a non-modular anion theory. This can't be captured purely on the boundary of a three-dimensional topological polystabilizer code. It also can't be captured by two-dimensional topological polystabilizer codes. So this is unique to subsystem codes.
Is this basically some Z4 gauge theory, but I need some particle like that?
It's a sub-theory of the Z4 toric code anions. You can think of Z4 1. This one denotes the fact that it's the anion theory generated by M bound to this number of charges. So it's the anion theory generated by M bound to a single charge. It's the anion theory generated by EM. So if you just look at the sub-theory generated by EM, this is exactly what you get. There's a semion, that's EM, E squared M squared is a boson, and this is again a semion. Okay, before I go over the construction, let me say a few more words about what this anion theory means physically. You know, before we could talk about excitations of a Hamiltonian, but what does an anion theory of a subsystem code mean? For stabilizer codes, we can define a unique, exactly solvable Hamiltonian. We can think of the stabilizers as being conserved quantities of the Hamiltonian. Of course, the stabilizers commute with each other, so the stabilizers commute with the Hamiltonian. And the anions are nothing other than the excitations of that Hamiltonian. For subsystem codes, however, there is no canonical Hamiltonian. Instead, we can define a parameter space of Hamiltonians, where the Hamiltonian terms are products of gauge operators. They're products of gauge generators. They're gauge operators, weighted by some coefficient J sub G. So as you change those coefficients, you probe this parameter space. And there may be various phases and phase transitions exhibited by this model. The stabilizers are common conserved quantities.
Are all the Gs still commute?
The Gs don't commute. This is a frustrated Hamiltonian. That's why you have all these phases and phase transitions. G is in general non-abelian. So yeah, these are not exactly solvable.
As for what is Hamiltonian,
so the stabilizers are common conserved quantities. The stabilizer that I showed you before is indeed a one-form symmetry, and it is anomalous. Yeah, so it's Hamiltonians with some common one-form symmetry, and essentially these Gs are all the terms that preserve that one-form symmetry. But what I'd like to point out is that anions in this case can be thought of informally as excitations that are common to all the gapped Hamiltonians. So for the Z4-1 code, we can expect that in any of the gapped phases, we have the Z4-1 anion theory, or rather some extension of the Z4-1 anion theory, some modular extension. Okay, let's take a step back. How did we construct the Z4-1 subsystem code? What we did is a process that we termed gauging out anions. So we start with a Z4 toric code. Here the stabilizer is the Z4 toric code. And then we'll gauge out anions, in particular the E cubed M anion. And that amounts to adding short string operators for the E cubed M anions to the gauge group. The effect of this is that it reduces the conserved quantity. Some conserved quantities of the Z4 toric code are violated by these short string operators. So we have a reduced set of conserved quantities. And we go from the Z4 cross Z4 anion theory to the Z4 anion theory.
So gauge out meaning what?
Gauge out meaning what? Sorry?
Gauge out
means. Gauge out means that, yeah, it's maybe unfortunate language again. But it means that, in this case, I'm going to gauge out E cubed M anion. That means that what I do is I take the short string operators for that anion and just append them to the stabilizer group.
So in terms of effective field theory, what does
it
mean?
Well, I don't know that there's a clear effective field theory here because I don't have a Hamiltonian.
But if I start from the Z4 to the code, it has an effective field theory.
Yeah, then maybe it's very complicated because it depends on how it's this horrible family of Hamiltonians that aren't exactly solvable. You know, in some phases it might do some things. For other parameter regimes, it might do something else. OK, but going back to Chang's question, why would you want to do this? You've just reduced the amount of space that you're using to store information. Well, there's a clear benefit here. And that's that this set of generators of the gauge group can be simplified. I can simplify them to these two-body operators. So that's right, we've sacrificed a portion of our code space to the gauge subsystem. But the benefit is that we simplify the operators that we need to measure. So in a stabilizer code, you measure the stabilizer generators to detect errors. In subsystem codes, you measure the gauge operators. Measuring two-body operators, in some cases, is far simpler than measuring four-body operators. So the advantage here is that you simplify the actual protocol for detecting errors. So this construction can be generalized. In general, we can take a stack of topological polystabilizer codes in two dimensions, and via this process of gauging out, which I can go into more detail if anyone's curious later, we produce a new topological polystabilizer code. And it turns out that these subsystem codes exhaust all abelian anion theories. They capture those that don't admit a gap boundary and non-modular anion theories. So before making any further comments or discussing avenues for future work, let me summarize. I've showed you three constructions. In the first, we built two-dimensional topological polystabilizer codes by taking a stack of toric codes and condensing some bosons. This produces codes that are characterized by anion theories with gap boundaries. Then we moved to three dimensions and constructed codes that store quantum information on their boundary. And finally, we generalize from stabilizer codes to subsystem codes. And our subsystem codes are characterized by arbitrary abelian anion theories. Before I make concluding comments, are there any questions about any of these constructions?
So does it get like a no-go for the subsystem approach for non-abelian? It seems like a pretty big theory to work with.
So what I can say is you can have non-abelian phases appear within this phase diagram. You have this large parameter space. There's nothing to exclude non-abelian anion theories from showing up. But you could ask, well, can the anion theory of the subsystem code, the anions that are common to this whole parameter space, be non-abelian? And the answer is, again, I suspect no. And that's because I think you can always make it so that the creation operators are products of Pauli operators. And I can't imagine using a product of Pauli operators to create a non-abelian anion. But there are generalizations. You can remove Pauli here. And then you can talk about subsystem codes that are characterized by non-abelian anions. And we have a general construction of those subsystem codes I can tell you about later. It's not written up anywhere, but it's kind of cute. Yeah?
Are these subsystem codes related to these gapped fracton models in any way?
Are they related to gapped fracton models?
Where you can start with layers of, say, the toric code.
So the subsystem here is being used differently than how subsystem is used in the context of fracton code. So in the context of fracton, subsystems mean spatial subsystems. This is not a spatial subsystem. It's a subsystem within a subspace. So the connection isn't through the word subsystem, at least. But you could certainly build subsystem codes characterized by fracton orders, then maybe there's a connection. But anything direct is, I don't see.
Question?
Yeah.
The takeaway that you can represent any abelian theory with gap boundary by this construction. What are the other way, can you prove that this is all, everything, that all those that you can represent?
That's a great question, and it's an open question. I'm not sure. We don't have a complete classification of topological Pauli stabilizer codes in two dimensions. There are proofs for prime dimensional qudits with translation invariants, but for composite dimensional qudits, the math just gets, it's hard. You no longer are dealing with a field, you're dealing with a ring. So people haven't been able to make any concrete statements about a classification. We expect that this is a complete classification. Anything else would be beyond the theory of anions. So I don't have any doubt that that's a complete classification, but certainly no proof.
I remember you mentioned that all the bulk errors can be corrected for the SVD dimension.
Yeah.
It does not generate excitation. Okay.
If it does not generate excitations.
Yeah.
Sorry, can you say that again? If it doesn't?
It does not generate any excitations inside a bulk.
Oh, there are excitations inside the bulk?
I cannot detect them using the stabilizer.
You can. So there are stabilizers on the boundary and in the bulk. To do error detection, you measure all the stabilizers. There may be errors that occurred in the bulk. Those are detected by the stabilizers. What's special about the bulk is that those errors, those excitations can be created locally. So you can remove them locally. You don't have to make any guesses about how to pair up anions via string operators. And that's where the ambiguity comes in, and you might accidentally corrupt your information. Yeah?
Is that gauging out procedure similar to anion condensation in the usual?
That's a great question. I have a slide on that. Maybe what I can do, because I'm pressed for time here, maybe I can conclude by listing some future directions, and then I can come back to your question. And if I forget, you can please do remind me. So here are some further comments, but let me conclude by just very briefly commenting on some potential avenues for future work. You know, as already pointed out, an important and large problem is classifying local quantum error correcting codes. This might mean geometrically local and topological quantum error correcting codes, but it also includes things like these quantum LDPC codes where locality is softened to some extent. And it's natural to try and think about those codes in terms of topological codes in a sense, which I won't make precise here. Once we've identified all these codes, an important next step is assessing their utility for quantum error correction and processing quantum information. This means maybe computing the error thresholds for these codes or identifying platforms that are well suited for hosting these codes. Another direction for future work is to develop similar codes for continuous variable systems or fermionic systems beyond abelian anions. A lot of interest in quantum computation with anions in the first place came from non-abelian anions, but that story hasn't been fully fleshed out in my mind. There is no proof that quantum computation with non-abelian anions is completely fault tolerant. It's completely robust to errors in your qubits and measurement errors. So that's something that still needs to be worked out, and fortunately we have some advancements in studying these topological quantum error correcting codes in space-time and using decoders cleaning up errors in space-time, which may be valuable for proving that non-abelian anions can be fault tolerant. These three-dimensional topological Pauli stabilizer codes also have some interesting connections to measurement-based quantum computation. It turns out that these codes can be used for measurement-based quantum computation. And in fact, the one-form SPT phase, which was mentioned earlier, we have some arguments to say that the whole phase is it's a universal property that you can use it for measurement-based quantum computation. Let me also say that after you have some measurement-based protocol, which I haven't defined, you can then build single-shot quantum error correcting codes. These have the advantage that you don't have to repeat measurements. You can have fault tolerance with single round of measurements, and there's some consistency checks on those measurements. Surprisingly related idea is that of mixed state topological orders. There's a nice way of thinking about mixed state topological orders in terms of subsystem codes. The logical subsystem defines a decoherence-free subspace, and the noise that builds these topological subsystem codes only acts within this gauge subsystem. So this gives a way of, just by characterizing subsystem codes by anion theories, you can also define some mixed state topological orders in this way. All right, I am at an hour, so I'll stop here and thank you for your attention.
Just to remind you.
Yeah, good, okay. So the question was, what's the connection between condensation and gauging out? And I have a table here to compare them. So condensation requires that the anion, this is the exchange statistics of the anion A, it requires that it's a boson. It requires that A is a boson. Whereas for gauging out an anion, we have no restrictions on the exchange statistics. This manifests itself in the fact that the short string operators for this anion need to be mutually commuting so that they can you can simultaneously add them to the Hamiltonian. You can talk about the mutual plus one eigenspace, and they can be proliferated. Whereas here, it's not clear what you're doing. It's not clear that you're proliferating the anion because those terms fail to commute with one another. So gauging out is more general in that sense. So here you add short string operators to the stabilizer group. They need to be mutually commuting. You're adding short string operators to define a gauge group. For condensation, the anions become identified. But for gauging out, there's no identification. But you still have confinement on both sides. So there's the connections. It's maybe easiest to see the similarities and differences through just more examples and going through the examples in detail. Yeah, thank you for the question.
In the future direction, you mentioned one direction is to classify local quantum. What does this classification mean?
This bit, the top left corner, is that what you're asking about? What does a classification mean? Yeah, it depends on the code. So if we're talking about 2D topological Pauli stabilizer codes, you might classify them up to locality preserving Clifford unitaries, local finite depth Clifford unitaries and ancilla. For subsystem codes, similarly, you might use finite depth Clifford circuits and ancilla. Maybe you also allow yourself to add ancillary stabilizer codes. So the equivalence relation depends on the class of codes. So I didn't specify that here, but yeah.
So back to this gauge out. I guess in principle, one way to get rid of some anions and get some modular theory is to make that anion infinitely costly in energy, right? Okay. Only in term to infinity. Is that similar to this gauge out?
Yeah, that's the idea, right? Because we're adding these. In the case of the Z41 subsystem code, we're adding these E cubed M short string operators. And we've defined anions. As violations of gauge operators. So presumably they're created by some extended operator that commutes with all the gauge operators along the length of the string. If we add E cubed M string operators to the gauge group, now the string operators for anions with non-trivial braiding relations will no longer create the anions because it fails to commute with gauge operators all along the length. it's not clear that there's an energetic confinement, but there's a confinement in this gauge sense. So like an E anion would fail to commute with these string operators. It's created by Z's, and now it's going to fail to commute with these X operators that appear in the gauge group. So that's the mechanism by which these anions become confined, but it's not energetic confinement, generically.
Can I try to understand this subsystem called disruption? So, the subsystem called, again, maybe I can't copy of the system on the right degree of state of the group. If I have one type of unit power, I can just drop the plumbing operator and then construct my left side and right side. Stabilizer, the yes, stabilizer. If I look at the one the system, it looks like subsystem. Then I feel like if I do that, using up maybe possible other normal condensing because I would be using up one left and one right, so that way.
So maybe I didn't catch the full construction. Are you stacking subsystem codes or you're stacking stabilizer codes?
If I do that, then I can keep all these stabilizer amounts locally. Each system is not the one. And like when you probably have the coupling, so that there are coupling comes in all these. If I do that one subsystem, one copy, then it's like subsystem.
So maybe what you're saying is I'm going to keep these terms, but I'll modify these for a second. Yeah, maybe we can discuss this more later. There is also some very recent work, like last week, where they talked about doubling subsystem code, doubling quote unquote subsystem codes to map them from non-CSS subsystem codes to CSS subsystem codes. So maybe that's related to this idea of doubling that you have in mind.
There is also a version of this model one model where we put in a free model that's generated as non-model. Like a both top logical order against another non-model subsystem boundary. I don't know if there's anything to do with that. Like, is there something that can be engaged with the both top logical order or something like that?
Yeah, so one way to construct these subsystem codes, which is arguably significantly easier, is, so for Z41, for example, I can build a Walker-Wong model based on Z41. And what I get is a three-dimensional model that hosts Z41 on the surface. I don't know if this is very clear from the back, but maybe the words are enough. There's Z41 on the surface here, and as Dominic was just saying, since there are transparent anions, since there are some anions with trivial braiding relations, those anions can start on the surface. This is maybe S squared. And those can leak into the bulk, and they're bulk excitations. So one way of constructing these codes, the chiral semion boundary code, is to start with the Z41 Walker-Wong model and then condense the S squared anion. That confines all the anions in the bulk. And you reduce from Z41 to the chiral semion theory. But more generally, what you can do is input some premodular anion theory, some non-modular anion theory, let me call it A. Then you have A on one surface, and on the bottom surface, you have the time-reversed theory, A bar. And what you can do is add gauge operators that correspond to the full operator algebra below some point, below this half, in this lower half. Then you've functionally gauge confined, in that sense that I tried to clarify earlier, all the anions on the bottom surface, and you're left with just A on the top surface. And this is how you would construct subsystem codes for non-abelian theories, too. You input some non-abelian anion theory, then add the full operator algebra as to your gauge group, but only the full operator algebra in the lower half of the system. And that just removes everything in the bottom half. And functionally, that gauges out all the anions down here, but it's kind of brutal the way you're doing it.
Maybe we had this picture of the Hamilton unit, so something like that. Mm-hmm. And, can you explain it a little bit more?
This one?
What is the motivation for finding the Hamilton?
Well, the idea is, okay, so maybe to make this a physical Hamiltonian, maybe I require that these coefficients are exponentially decaying. They depend on the support of G. So for large gauge operators, they have low weights. So now we have some class, some family of physical Hamiltonians. And what's special about this family of Hamiltonians, as Liu Jin was alluding to, is that these stabilizers, in some case, generate an anomalous one-form symmetry. So it enforces some topological order in all of the gapped phases. So it's the Hamiltonian isn't canonical. It isn't related to encoding of information. But it's interesting from a condensed matter standpoint, because now you have some guarantee that there will be something interesting when you probe the phase diagram. There will be some topological order.
Right. And what happens if you come from a stabilized
point?
What is the role of the gauge group?
The gauge group, you can think of it as all of the Pauli operators that preserve that one-form symmetry. So the most general Hamiltonians are going to be generated by those gauge operators. You could just consider the stabilizers. That's your Hamiltonian. But that will have, generically, a lot of local degeneracies. So I don't know if that's interesting from that standpoint. But, you know.
I think there's like a general Hamiltonian.
That's right. Yeah, it's the most general thing that preserves that one-form symmetry, and the one-form symmetry here is some product of Pauli operators. So we've conjectured that this captures all anion theories that are modular extensions of the one-form symmetry. So modular extensions of Z41, for example, all of those phases should be realized within this phase diagram. Assuming that those anion theories admit a representation where that subtheory of one-form symmetry can be represented by by products of Pauli operators. That's not entirely clear, but I don't see why that's unbelievable.
You also asked about the gap between.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have done some work in a particular example, which is the Z31 subsystem code instead of Z41. It's defined on Q-trits. And we found signatures that at the isotropic point, it is gapped and exhibits a Fibonacci anion theory. These are just very difficult to study numerically, and we suspect now that we might have found a local minimum. So even in these gap phases are difficult, I imagine that the gapless points are also difficult to probe numerically.
So we studied that one point in the space is very difficult?
We studied that one point. Yeah.
That's just the Mason's generalized G-type model, right?
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Anyone else? So,